following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
Welcome to The Lawyer's Edge, a program that seeks to answer your questions on civil, criminal, constitutional, and political legal matters with attorneys Robert J. Slama and David Trotty. Robert J. Slama is a U.S. veteran and prominent attorney who has served as counsel for some of Jacksonville's most high-profile cases. Robert Slama is a member of the Florida Bar and the U.S. Supreme Court Bar Associations. He's argued cases in Florida, as well as constitutional cases, before the highest court in the land. David Trotty is a Florida Bar attorney, practicing since 2000, and is a certified civil and family law mediator and a qualified arbitrator in the state of Florida. His practice focuses on family and criminal law issues and mediation. He's a former Marine who served in Japan and the U.S. Embassy in Austria and Tanzania. Also a federal police officer with the Central Intelligence Agency. It's now time to discuss today's legal topics and issues and how they impact your family and small business. Now, live from the WBOB studios, here's attorneys Robert J. Slama and David Trotty.
And welcome to The Lawyer's Edge. David Trotty and Robert Slama here with us. Robert is on the road right now, and I understand on the line, and David Trotty in the studios. Guys, welcome.
How's it going?
I'm good. Robert, are you there?
Hey, yes, I am.
Fabulous.
What a wonderful day. It's the day before Valentine's. What do you do with this day?
I don't know.
Anybody?
What do we do?
Anybody?
We give away a gift basket today. That's what we do.
Call
in. But we're going to give away a gift basket. It's a Peter Brooks gift basket worth $50. Beautiful chocolate basket. It makes a wonderful, well, it's a beautiful gesture, and it goes well with dinner. So you provide the dinner, I'll provide the gift basket.
Okay. Now,
how's that?
Well, I think it's great, but will the guy be in the doghouse if he's listening right now, wins this for his wife, and say that a guy named Robert made this available for you? Or should he just act like it was him?
Whatever will get him out of the doghouse, that's the best I can say.
Okay.
Plausible deniability.
Exactly. So that'll be our little secret. Call in at 904-222-TALK with any legal question. You become eligible, and then the end of the show, I guess Robert will pick someone who he considers to be the best caller of the day with the best legal question, and you'll get that $50 gift basket, compliments and full of things from Peter Brook Chocolatier.
You know, I think it's a great idea that we have this show the day before Valentine's Day. Because in the family law context, when we have a divorce just starting, or the divorce has been over for a year, 2 years, or 5 years, or whatever the number of years it's been that has passed, and there are children involved, what is the importance of Valentine's Day, or any other holiday for that matter? I like to encourage my son, and I think other parents should be encouraging their children, to understand the importance of recognizing the holiday and the importance and the effect of that holiday on the other parent. So let's say I have my son for Valentine's Day tomorrow. Yes, school's in session. It's not a national holiday, and school's not out. So it's kind of like, you know, the course keeps on going. You know, he's either with me or he's with mom. But I make sure that my son takes a moment, and he's either, when he was younger, he used to draw his own cards for his mom and make his cards and color them. We go out and buy a gift for her. And it wasn't a gift from me to my former wife. It was a gift that my son would pick out for his mom, which I'm teaching my son the importance of recognizing his mom on these holidays.
Mm-hmm.
And so as the parent that he is staying with that specific holiday, I am really responsible for fostering the relationship between my son and his mom. And one way we can do that and build bridges and communication that will just help us through a lot of turmoil in the years that follow is by recognizing the other parent, letting the child recognize the other parent, making sure as a parent that we say, hey, son, hey, daughter, let's make sure you draw your mom or dad a Valentine's card.
You know, I've got a friend who's things didn't work out between him and he and his wife, and they have children. And every Mother's Day and every Valentine's Day, he makes sure that the kids, he takes them out, picks out a gift. They pick out a gift. He actually pays for it.
Of course.
Right. But so that the mom is honored on these special days that are important to her. And I think that's really important for the nurturing of the children, which is what I think his goal is more than anything else.
Absolutely. And gentlemen out there, it is, and this kind of cuts both ways, because I think a dad and a mom are in certain situations where if the other spouse is dating or married, you've got to be very careful in the choice or the selection of the gift for the child to the other parent, because you don't want to cross a line or make it appear that you're crossing a line. So I think if the communication is open from day one, from day one that you separate, this is the routine that we do. Mm-hmm. Former spouse, understand this is not me to you. It's the child to you. And because of their age, right now I'm having to help pick out the gift.
Yeah. Well, so oftentimes you hear of people who have been divorced. What sometimes I would assume happened, I haven't been divorced, but other parent will tell the kid that your other mom, your mom or your dad is a horrible person. Do you see that happening a lot?
Oh, just a little.
Okay.
It's terrible. It's terrible, the brainwashing or the alienation that occurs with children. I think, Robert, and you can speak to this because, you know, we both do family law. We hear this every day. It is the worst thing that can happen if that child has a good relationship with the other parent. I'm being facetious there.
Yeah, absolutely. You and I have talked about this, but I think this is where the dilemma comes in. Here they are in the battle of custody, and they're used to fighting that other person, fighting for position, fighting for what they perceive to be the real best interest of the child. Then when it ends, we're asking them appropriately to be bridge builders and now to extend all the courtesy, all the respect, everything towards that other person. And then this is where I say that it becomes difficult for some because they become so used to being an adversary and so used to believing that they're the one speaking for the child that they don't know how to, they don't want to. And I'll add another dimension to it. They want everyone to think that they are not the cause of the divorce. They're the one who's not the one who's harmed the child. And it really becomes two parties can be so ingrained in their position that they, as you have said, it's difficult for them to go parent.
Well, Robert, Robert, your phone's making some funny Martian noises out there.
Yes, it is.
But, you know, he's
funny
absolutely
Martian
right.
Noises.
Yeah, some Martian noise, some feedback or something going on. But one of the things Robert's alluding to is as a parent, and this is whether you are the parent that has most of the time with the child or not most of the time with the child, we're trying to shove this title as majority time sharing parent and non-majority time sharing parent. And we got to be really clear out there. The statute does not designate a title to either parent. You're just parents. They got away from custodial and non-custodial. They got away from primary and non-primary. But when we get back from this break, we're going to talk about not only something that I stepped in this recent Christmas with some gifts to my former spouse, but also we're going to talk about the primary role of the parent. If you want to call and ask your questions, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. I'm David, and Robert's on the line.
A law firm dedicated to helping families. A law firm dedicated to you. The law firm of Robert J. Slama.
Hi, I'm Robert Slama, and I want to be your family's attorney. For over 17 years, I've assisted the Jacksonville community by providing a full-service law firm for families, not the rich and powerful, but for everyday families like yours. Since 1998, I have handled some of the most complicated cases in Jacksonville, including Brenton Butler, and more recently the jury verdict in Jermaine DuBose. Whether it's family law, including divorce, custody, or bankruptcy, juvenile law, personal injury, probate, civil rights, or not-for-profit and churches, I'm dedicated to helping your family with your legal needs. I'm Robert Slama, and I want to be your family's attorney. Call me anytime. My number is 904-296-1050, or you may text me at 838-8607. The law firm of Robert J. Slama.
You're listening to The Lawyer's Edge with Robert J. Slama, attorney at law, and David Trotty, attorney at law. Both guys, they work in different fields of law because law is not just one thing, is it, guys?
It is not just one thing.
What are the different types of law that you see practiced? Well, there's family law.
Well, that's a loaded question,
yeah.
Because how many statutes are there? And every statute can be a specific area of law.
Okay.
But primarily, we have some primary categories. We have family and domestic law,
okay,
which would be like adoptions, not domestic violence, but family law issues,
right.
Paternity cases, dependency cases,
right?
Those types of
and
stuff.
And unfortunately, a divorce.
Well, yeah, that's family law, divorce cases.
Okay.
Then, of course, you have the criminal law,
okay,
which deals with any. You have felony criminal, and you have county court, which is misdemeanor. You have civil litigation, which is anything that's not family related or not criminally related.
Mm-hmm.
Which is your personal injury cases, your evictions, your lawsuits for suing over a contract, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Anything dealing with real property, that's civil litigation.
But there's med-mal.
Med-mal.
Yeah. I mean, that's medical malpractice for those watching by television.
Right. Well, let me regress really quick. And I think, Robert, you haven't heard this story, but you'll get a chuckle out of this one. So, unfortunately, I've been separated and divorced from my wife since my child was just after 3 years old. So it's been a while.
Mm-hmm.
He's 14 now, so it's been a while. And like I said, I've made it a practice during our period of separation and divorce, post-divorce, to ensure that my child recognizes mom, especially on Mother's Day and Christmas. Well, this past Christmas, there's three people that I make sure my son recognizes right now, and it's his godmother. Godmother Kathy, his former wife, his mom, and and my girlfriend of she's almost 3 years now. So what I make sure he does is we go out and we pick out some stuff. So I have this one shop that I go to, and I'm gonna drop a name, Underwoods Jewelers, and they have these really, for his age, they have a specials that they come across every month, every 2 months, every 3 months, and they're inexpensive. They're not over the counter costume jewelry, but it's something that your wife or your former wife or a godmother would like to have and which she would actually wear. So that's why I like to get Dominic to get his mom. Typically, it's earrings or a bracelet.
Okay.
Well, what happened this year is because I was not using my due diligence. Is I made my contact with my connection at this jewelry store, and I was not using the front part of my brain here. And so when the ladies opened up their gifts, I quickly realized they each had the same thing.
Okay.
So, note to self. Make sure we look at what we're selecting and how many and what the variety is.
Okay.
So that was a little funny thing. And so it was a neat experience. It wasn't the best experience this past Christmas, but it was a fun experience.
Yeah. So let me ask you this question.
Well,
go ahead, Robert.
I'm going to put that on Facebook, by the way. And I know your contact, but I am going to put that on Facebook.
Oh, don't do that.
Well, let me ask you gentlemen this question. You guys, you know, deal with unfortunate circumstances where, you know, couples, things don't work out. There are kids involved. And then one of the divorced spouses gets remarried to someone else.
Does that happen?
Yeah, of course, all the time.
Or maybe they get married, divorced, married again.
Yes.
But I understand the concept.
Yeah. What about the kids? What happens when they start calling the stepmom or dad mom or dad, and the whole emotional turmoil that may create? How do you help your clients, you know, process that?
It causes a lot of issues, doesn't it, Rob?
Oh, what we suggest is that you agree on a name of what you're going to call them and how you're going to address them.
Whose responsibility, Robert? Whose responsibility is that? Is it the, let's say I'm going to get remarried. So I have a spouse in my life. I'm going to get remarried, and I have a child. Is it my responsibility to educate my soon-to-be spouse and my child of what to call, or is it the my former spouse?
Well, I would say both the two of you talk and you agree on something is always better than leaving it to the one. But certainly, if you're getting remarried, that person, as they're brought into the relationship, I think it's up to you to identify who the person is and what they would prefer to be called, but also having some input from the other spouse.
Of course. And I think a big thing to do is if you are the spouse who has a significant other and you have that communication, it's your responsibility to make sure the line is drawn that new spouse or that spouse-to-be is not going to be called mom or dad, okay? It's either stepdad, stepmom. Sometimes they have different types of names. Maybe they call them by the first name. Maybe they don't. Maybe it's Mr. Joe, Mrs. Betty.
Or even a nickname that has a term of endearment kind of capacity to it.
Of course, but what the courts don't like to see, in my experience, is anything that's anything that resembles mom or dad.
Okay.
You know,
and the courts actually get involved in this, I guess, huh?
They could. And they want to preserve the relationship and the statutory right of a parent to parent their child. But here's where it gets really gray and murky, is when you have a child and a parent is not involved in that child's life, especially at the younger ages. So say the child's, 1, 2, 3 years old when the divorce or the separation happens, and a parent, doesn't matter if it's mom or dad, isn't involved, and another parent comes in, because we're all co-parents, whether you're the biological father or mother or not, you're co-parents if you're in that child's life. My son's godmother is a co-parent to my son. So whatever that role is, that parent has, or that child has now identified with that parental figure. And just by nature's course, that parent, that co-parent coming to school functions, birthdays, always there, and the child not seeing another parental figure in their life that fits the void of mom or dad, sometimes that child just kind of sheets to that role and that name of, hey, this is my mom, this is my dad,
mm-hmm.
innocently. And what happens is you have this term of endearment, the spouse that's coming in is hearing this child call him or her mom or dad, and now the child's 9 or 10 years old, and you have the biological parent coming in, and they're like, whoa, Nellie, I'm the mom or I'm the dad. You're going to stop calling them mom or dad at this point. So it gets really muddy and murky as the kids get older, as the kids have more time with the one parent and a parent is absent. So that's a good point.
Okay. What about situations where, things didn't work out, obviously, and there's a new step-parent involved, but you don't like certain aspects of their life? I guess you don't have any control over it, but suppose, hypothetically speaking, you're trying to raise your child to be a strong, committed, evangelical Christian, but the new step-parent is a Muslim, and they're teaching them all about Islam. How does a parent handle that?
That's interesting.
Easy. Usually... in the divorce decree, and this is at the time of the divorce, that and you hit it, and I'm going to address specifically what you hit about Muslim and Sharia law. Through some of the bills that have come to the legislature, there were bills, and as I understand it, have actually been passed, and other states are doing the same thing, that the court does not have to apply Sharia law. Now, aside from Sharia, how a court is going to figure out what is a custom and a practice that's unrelated to Sharia, I don't know. But I suppose down the road that may be an issue. But typically, what we put in the divorce decrees is that the parties, and again, this is part of shared parental, that the parties will agree and raise the children with you know, certain common shared beliefs.
Okay, Robert, it sounds like your radio may
be
turned up while you're doing the program. We're getting some feedback. Is that the case, or are we just hearing weird things?
How is that? Are you hearing?
He might be broadcasting from the Olympics.
That's what it is. And they don't have really good telecommunications there in Korea. Not being funny.
There's some great broadcasting coming from Korea. I was watching it last night.
Good for you.
The downhill was incredible. But I think we have a, and Robert, I don't mean to be stepping on your toes here, but in our parenting plans, we have a designated place that's called Shared Parental Responsibilities. And there's decision making. And one of the areas that we want to cover is religious education and medical. So when it comes to religious upbringing, is there one parent that has a stronger faith or stronger practice or not? Are they both practicing Catholics? Are they both practicing Lutherans? What do they want to do? In our society, some parents aren't really into the every Sunday, let's go to church. Some parents aren't into, we have to have Christmas Eve and Christmas morning. Every family is different. So when you get into these cross beliefs, like you said, like, hey, we raise our kids Catholic, or we raise our kids Baptist, or we raise our kids evangelical, mm-hmm. and now we have a totally different, whether it's Buddhist, whether it's Muslim, whether it's just a totally different belief than what you raised your kids for 4 or 5 years, come into another relationship. How do you deal with that? Well, first you try to communicate. And I think so long as the practice that's in one home isn't causing a harm to that child, okay, if the child's participating and wanting to participate in it, and the two parents say, okay, it's a safe environment, I don't know that the court's going to interfere unless we show some type of detriment to the child, okay, because, you know, we still have separation of church and state.
Okay? Right, right.
So we can't tell somebody what to practice.
Okay, let's take this to the next step then. What if, and, you know, we're having a social paradigm shift right now with respect to, like, you know, same-sex LGBT rights. What if, you know, mom decides that she wants to, you know, pursue a same-sex relationship, and now there's a co-parent there on the other hand, and your child is now being subjugated to being taught that homosexuality is normal?
You know, I started practicing in 2000. One of my first cases was a divorce. Young man was a child. And it was a post-divorce modification, my first cases. And the mom wanted to get into a same-sex relationship, and the dad was fighting it. Now, this is back in 2000. Totally different mindset.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have same-sex equality rights that we have now. But I don't think the court is going to step in and say, this child cannot be, in fact, I'm sure they won't, step in and say that child will not be with those parents because they want to have a same-sex relationship now. They're not going to do that unless there's some detriment or harm to that child. So you say, hey, we come from a heterosexual relationship and we're raising our child as heterosexuals, and now you want to have a same-sex relationship on this side. What's that teaching our child, whether it's a boy or a girl? I don't think the courts are going to interfere as long as it's a safe and healthy relationship. It doesn't mean that you as a person, as a litigator, or as the judge, have a different opinion, personal opinion, but that should not affect the way you handle the case.
Interesting.
Well, you know, and Roger, to add to it now, you have, because of the Supreme Court opinion, it's now it's on different ground. And that ground is that it is something that will permit that practice. But there's a religious issue on the other side when it comes to that.
Okay.
Well, also, the basket. Giving away the basket.
Okay. Well, Robert, we're up on a hard break. We'd love to have your call come in at 222-TALK, 222-8255. You could win a Peterbrook Chocolatier basket valued at $50 for Valentine's Day. The Lawyer's Edge will return right here on AM 600 and 101.1 FM Talk Radio WBOB after the break. You are listening to The Lawyer's Edge with Robert J. Slama and David Trotty. They're both attorneys. Not the same practice, but they're friends. And they happen to focus sometimes on things like family law. And it's Valentine's week. Tomorrow's Valentine's Day. And making available a gift basket full of chocolates. So if you call in at 904-222-TALK, 904-8255 with a really good question, then your name will be placed in the hat, and then a name will be drawn to take that Valentine's Day gift basket full of yummy stuff from Peterbrook Chocolatiers and maybe bless that very special someone in your life.
You know, it's interesting. During the break, my phone, I'm not going to say it was blowing up because it's still right here, but received a couple text messages. And the conversations that we're having is about shared parental responsibilities mm-hmm. and decision, joint decision making. And one of the comments that were made was about corporal punishment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know there's a movement to ban all corporal punishment that, you know, the doctors and the psychologists are saying it does no good to children. I have not followed that study yet, but I can see where they're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
I could also see the old school thought where some corporal punishment is effective. I came from the I was born in 69, so I was raised in the 70s, and, mm-hmm. and there was corporal punishment. I wasn't brought into the woodshed. But my dad had a stiff hand and a nice board. That's just how it went. And,
yeah.
and you knew when my dad said we're going to have a prayer meeting when we got home, we're not going around the corner to the church. It was a prayer meeting with dad. And it was about something that a teacher called I was an angel. It's probably about my brother, more likely.
Yes.
Just kidding. But corporal punishment. And the question that this person texted me was, what do you do if the former spouse's new boyfriend or wife want to spank the child
right
for discipline issues?
Yes. Do you want somebody, another adult, some other man if you're a father, or some other woman if you're a mom, spanking your child as if they've got a right to? Because that's a very, you know.
Here's what I would say. I would say absolutely not.
Okay.
For a couple reasons. Number one, from the perspective of the paramour, the living boyfriend or girlfriend or soon to be spouse, from their perspective, don't even go down that road. I know it weakens your position. You know, if you are a respectable person and you're parenting and you're co-parenting in that household with respect and love, and I don't think you'll have to go the route of corporal punishment at all. But let the parent of that child administer corporal punishment if you're going to do corporal punishment at all. A lot of parents don't do corporal punishment. I applaud them. You know, it's either, you know, they're taking away their entitlements, whether it's a TV, not entitlements, but their TVs or Segways or a Segway. Yeah, the Segways.
Yeah.
You know, they're taking away their games and stuff. And then
their cell phones.
Their cell phones.
Their tablets, their computer access.
You know,
I've even known of cases where a parent has taken the door off the hinges of their bedrooms so they lose privacy. There are different ways you can apply punishment.
You know, there's case law there, right?
I think Robert has a comment. What's going on, Robert?
No, it's at the point that someone is exercising corporal punishment over the child, that's that's beyond an authority figure. That's a parental role. So the parent, if I'm in the house and say I have somebody else in the house, forget about whether it's just a spouse. It's another person, adult. The issue is teaching respect for adults. And the parent is the one who has to achieve that. And that person cannot abdicate that role. That's where the problem comes in.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I can imagine you're dealing with teenagers possibly, or even preteens. Part of the discipline issue might be a lack of respect for the new boyfriend or the new stepfather or new girlfriend or stepmother. And if they use corporal punishment to try to enforce that, I think that just makes it a whole lot worse.
It's a terrible situation, and I think it all depends. Again, let me go back to the paramour or the new step-parent. I would always tell them, unless you have both parents total consent and they are all on board and we are tackling this as co-parents, as the former husband, the former wife, and a new co-parent, unless you're on board, do not put yourself in that position where you can be accused of doing something wrong. Just don't do it. Unfortunately, that's the way today's society. Because everybody's going to jump on the bandwagon. You are going to be the perpetrator of something bad. Second is, it all depends on what age is the child. I'm not saying corporal punishment. I'm just saying we're talking about respective parents. and parental roles. I think a lot of it has to do with what age is the child when the separation occurs? What age is the child when the new paramour or the new spouse comes into that child's life? I think the older the child is, some ways it's easier, some ways it's harder, okay? Because say you have a 9 or 10-year-old or 12-year-old child, and they're used to mom and dad being there all the time, and now all of a sudden you get divorced, well, the child's going to feel slighted here or there. Or then you get into the situation where the child goes with the dad, and the dad has a majority of the time with the child. Mom starts saying stuff to the child behind the child's back.
And let me add something more, something equally significant to this equation. If that child gets hurt, bruised, and I'm going to add to it that the other parent has a history of domestic violence, fighting, abuse, that other parent is going to be filing a motion for sole parental on discipline if that doesn't stop. That's what I do. If I find that other parent cannot maintain and enforce what we agree as discipline, then I'm going to file a motion for sole parental on that aspect.
And Robert,
punishment.
Okay, so let's say mom and dad, dad has Robert, has you as an attorney. I have mom as an attorney. And the child's 14 years old, just not doing his homework, just being a typical 14-year-old boy. Starting to talk back to mom a little bit, and mom is wanting to discipline him.
Which normally happens even when couples stay together, because teens do rebel a little bit.
It does not happen. So, Robert,
you haven't been to my house.
So, Robert, you're going to file a motion with the court saying...
No, that's not what I said.
So now I just want to clarify for audience.
If your client, it was typical, the new husband or boyfriend steps in because he doesn't like how your son, her son is talking to her, and he starts administering discipline to that child, the mother is the one, if discipline is to be imposed, to do it, not him.
No, I agree with that.
If he's stepping in, he's inviting a motion.
Of course, and that's what I'm saying. If you are not the biological natural child, natural parent of that child, you need to have both parents on the same sheet of music, and probably a child psychologist to help you with ways to help get this child back in line. And if it's the point where this child is so rebellious that you cannot get him to walk. And let's not call it the straight and narrow. Let's call it just the crooked straight. You know, as straight as possible for some of these, you know, 12 to 14, 15-year-old kids. You know, they're experimenting. They're doing their own things. I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it's the right thing to do. But they are 14 years old. Okay? And I was having a hard time figuring out what to take away because, you know, in today's age we take away computers. We take away games. I had to throw out a segue out there. Because
you threw it in the garbage?
No, I had to throw it out there. We take it away from the kid because for punishment in today's age, we don't want to take away going outside. We don't want to take away you riding your bike or playing baseball because our kids don't do that enough.
You're right.
So what I found is one parent the other day says, I don't want to punish my kid by taking baseball away. I don't want to punish my kid by taking him off the sports team because that's his one outside outlet that he can get some of his nervous energy out and focus and get a coach, a third party who's an authoritative figure that he has to listen to and follow directions. So I think in today's age the co-parent umbrella extends to the paramours, extends to new spouses, grandparents, godparents, teachers, and you have to have a team. But I tell you what, one person can ruin that team in a heartbeat, and that can be a jealous former spouse. A former spouse that maybe, hey, here's one. How did you get the divorce started? Why did the trifecta? What's the trifecta?
Mother-in-law. Father-in-law.
Yeah, but what was the trifecta, Robert? When you first filed the divorce, what do? Somebody goes in, they get the domestic violence, criminal, they get the civil injunction, and they got the divorce filed. So let's say you're the mom or the dad sitting on the outside of the park. So you finally got the divorce done, and it's a year later. Now you have time with your kids. Now you have somebody else discipline the kids. You're not going to tolerate it.
Okay, we are up on another break right now. Call in at 904-222-TALK, 904-222-8255. You're listening to The Lawyer's Edge with Robert J. Slama and David Trotty, attorneys at law. And if you call in, your name will be placed in the hat for a Valentine's Day gift basket full of yummy stuff from Peterbrook Chocolates. Call in again, 904-222-TALK. This is WBOB.
A law firm dedicated to helping families. A law firm dedicated to you. The law firm of Robert J. Slama.
Hi, I'm Robert Slama, and I want to be your family's attorney. For over 17 years, I've assisted the Jacksonville community by providing a full-service law firm for families, not the rich and powerful, but for everyday families like yours. Since 1998, I have handled some of the most complicated cases in Jacksonville, including Brenton Butler, and more recently, the jury verdict in Jermaine DeBose. Whether it's family law, including divorce, custody, or bankruptcy, juvenile law, personal injury, probate, civil rights, or not-for-profit and churches, I'm dedicated to helping your family with your legal needs. I'm Robert Slama, and I want to be your family's attorney. Call me anytime. My number is 904-296-1050, or you may text me at 838-8607. The law firm of Robert J. Slama.
The Lawyer's Edge is on with Robert J. Slama and David Trotty, 904-222-TALK, 904-222-8255 here on AM 600 and FM 101.1 WBOB. And it's Valentine's Day tomorrow, so we're talking about some of the things when love goes a little south, or there's a new love involved after a love has gone south. And how do you work all that out from a legal perspective? And a lot of this kind of eclipses, you know, some of the social stuff and emotional needs of the family with respect to kids and that kind of thing. We're talking, David, off the air about what happens when there's now a blended family where there are now stepchildren involved and there's sibling rivalry already with the biological siblings. Now you have step-siblings and maybe they're getting a bigger allowance than the other kids who are dead broke all the time, and the siblings have all the money in the world that they could ever want, and that ends up creating, you know, who's better in the family. How do you handle all that? And is there a legal solution to it?
Well, not all blended families are the Brady Bunch. In fact, I'm going to say the majority of the families post-divorce are not the Brady Bunch. Yes, you have the sibling rivalries, but there, I believe, if I recall correctly, those two spouses were widows and widowers, and they brought two families together. But that's not as common. Typically, it's from two divorces. I've lived the experience. I was raised in the experience, and it is hard. You know, how do you – one family has a certain economic dynamic, and the other family has a different economic dynamic. Maybe one can afford – you know, living in Ponte Vedra, going to the club, eating out every day, but the other one is eating ramen noodles. And what do you do?
Well, you also have different thoughts about money and what's appropriate for the kids and spending vacation.
Yeah,
so it can be far-reaching.
Robert, is your radio in your car turned up a little bit too high because we're getting that weird feedback sound again?
I don't. I don't know if it's the... if it's the Bluetooth, but I'm not in it.
Okay.
All right. So we're getting that feedback from Korea again. I think they're doing the slalom today, I think.
Yeah.
But we have to be careful because it's very easy. It's especially for men, I believe, or the person in the better economic situation as a parent, it's very easy to buy love and affection from your children. I'm guilty of it. I'm not going to say I bought my child's affection, but it's easy because you have it. Maybe you didn't have it when you were a child, so you want to give it to your child. Without understanding, in the other household, they might not be as fortunate as you.
Right.
And you're creating a situation where the child wants to be with you instead of the other parent, Why? Because you're able to go to the toy store.
Okay, you're a very wealthy attorney, okay? Let's just say this hypothetical situation. Would it be, you think, in the best interest of the child when he goes to visit and spend time with the co-parent, his biological mother, and there are other kids involved, to not let him take his allowance with him, only spend it when he's in your care, in custody? Or how does that work? Does that work for a better, you think, social situation with what he has to go to?
I think it's difficult. Because I'm not in that situation, because my son has a 4-year-old sister. So just comparisons, the age gaps are just okay. Big, real different there.
I just set up a hypothetical. You can plug in anybody you want.
Yeah, we can plug in something there. And I think you have to be careful, because then if you say you can only bring your toy, you can't take your toys over to mom's house, or you can't spend your allowance over at mom's house, you can't use your Apple iTunes over at mom's house, you can't use your phone over at mom's house, you can't bring these clothes over at mom's house.
He doesn't want to go to mom's house anymore.
He's not going
to
want to go to mom's house.
Yeah.
If you buy your child, I really feel, but then I understand your question is you're almost not trying to protect your child, you're trying to protect him from the backlash he's going to receive from the stepkids when he gets over there. Oh, you're just spoiled, because they're not able to have what your child has. So you have to, it's a very delicate situation, and you have to treat, even if those kids are not in your house, if they're your son's brothers or sisters or half-brothers or sisters or step-brothers or sisters or whatever the situation might be, you have to make sure he understands those are his brothers and sisters, and try to treat them as equally as possible. I know you don't have to spend and buy everything for the other kids, and most parents don't want you to buy stuff for the other kids, but it is very delicate when you hit those situations.
Okay, I'm going to open up the big can of worms right now. Everybody isn't thinking about it, but, you know, Valentine's Day is tomorrow, and I actually know of a case where this has happened, okay? Mom and dad, things didn't work out. They went their separate ways. Mom remarried, and mom, the guy she married had a son already, okay? So, and they were living out of town. The son happens to be roughly the same age as the daughter. And guess what?
We don't want to go there.
Fireworks start to go off between the two kids. They're 14, 15 years old right now.
Separate them.
Next thing you know, they're kind of having a thing for each other.
Separate them. Automatic. You have to separate them.
Oh, God, yes.
Number one, anything under 15 is a crime, period. So you as a parent or as the step-parent or as the parent who's not in the house – you've got to say.
So you don't believe it's possible to kind of coexist like the Brady Bunch did with kids around the same age? I mean, what if they're trying to keep it a secret and they don't let you know that they are actually? But, you know, parents can kind of pick up on that kind of stuff, though.
Well, I don't know. Kids are very secretive these days.
Yeah.
You don't know what's happening behind closed doors. It's like in the workplace. You don't know what's happening behind the closet or the water breaks, you know. You have to be mindful. I think if you have a male and a female or whatever the situation is in today's time, if you have two kids of similar age, you have to be hyper-vigilant. And if you see something...
Watch them like a hawk, I guess.
Yeah, but you know, but then you start getting to the situation of invasion of privacy. And, you know, I don't think you take off doors and stuff, you know. It's all age-sensitive. But you got to protect the kids. But if you think something is going, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire, you've got to separate, assess the situation, and make sure there's no fire.
Have either of you seen situations like that?
Yeah. And Roger, the lack of supervision can lead to, again, a change in custody.
That's right.
That other parent is not going to deal with that if you're not dealing with it. And I've had that same case that you just described, where the other child turned 18 and there was contact. There was a criminal case, DCF, and it was a sad case because the two, the boy and the girl, were very close. And in part, it led to a almost complete destruction of both families. And the trust was never repaired.
And that's going to be the fallout. It's unfortunate because the family dynamic was probably really good in that situation. It just got too good.
Mm.
And it's like Robert was saying, you're going to have to separate. You have to, because you have to protect the child. And it doesn't matter if it's the male or the female. You got to protect both children.
How do you practically enforce that? You have a minor. Where are they going to go? You know, this is where they live. Does the other parent lose their parental rights for a while, or what?
No, I think it's case specific.
Okay.
I think it depends on what's happening, what is out there in the open, what you know for sure, what's factual, what you're speculating, and you have to take the appropriate precautionary steps and measures. And if you take the precautionary steps and you're talking to the other parent, and you know if there's something bad going on, you need to separate, number one. But let's say there's a hint. Number one, you separate. But number two, I think you need to discuss and get a plan of action and make sure that you're taking the necessary steps to protect the children.
Because in the real world, you know, it's normal for a 16, 17-year-old to, you know, have a little crush at school. But when that crush is living under the same roof with you, it changes the entire dynamic, huh?
Of course.
It can. And, you know, in this episode, it was more or less what they call experimentation. But what the effect of it was, the girl and the older brother, she was 15, I think 14 at the time, 14 and a half. He was 18. They got over it and didn't have any lingering issues. But the parent, it destroyed everyone. The daughter, her presence meant the brother couldn't be around. And then one day the daughter had her feet up on the lap of her other brother. And then the mother thought that what was happening was inappropriate. She didn't trust the father anymore.
Yeah, Robert, you're...
And I mean, the whole thing, it just...
Robert, your phone's...
It quickly unwound.
Yeah, Robert, your phone's really... giving us some good tunes over here.
Yeah.
But
if you had any idea how this was sounding, Robert.
Yeah. But Robert is absolutely right.
Uh-huh.
I mean, what happens is something occurs, and then you become this hyper-vigilant person,
right,
on steroids, and everything is a situation.
Right. And very protective parents will do that anyway, even if there wasn't a divorce. I remember when I visited my grandmother one summer when I was, 15 years old, and a girl down the street from her house, I guess she had a crush on me, would come over, and my grandmother was watching us out the window nonstop. And we're sitting on the porch. That's okay.
But you know what? I understand that.
Uh-huh.
I understand that. I think,
but it becomes more complicated when they're actually living in the house. You can't tell Cindy to go home.
But remember, you're talking about, in your situation, you're mm-hmm. talking about family members, cousins, and that mm-hmm. type of stuff. And so you have a natural sense of, okay, we're all family. We're not living in the same house. But the situation you're talking about, and you're absolutely right, whether it's cousins or a step situation, stepchildren in the same house, it's just there's nothing good about it at mm-hmm. all. And that's a whole day and a half topic right there in itself. We could probably have a guest speaker from the state attorney's office, public defender in here, with that topic, because it's huge, because the advice you give in the family law context is case specific. But the first thing is you've got to separate and address and figure out what you're going to do with this. But listen, it's Valentine's tomorrow. And you need to get out there. You need to get your loved ones a Valentine's card. If you have a child, make sure they're drawing a card for the other spouse and do the right thing.
Okay, thanks for joining us for The Lawyer's Edge with Robert Slama and David Trotty today here on AM 600 and 101.1 FM. Talk Radio WBOB. We'll see you next Tuesday, 2 o'clock, right here.